Welcome to Psychology Has It Backwards. This series will question the assumption that people are psychologically broken and need to be fixed. We will talk about how seeing people as innately healthy will change all of your interactions and outcomes. This is a true paradigm shift, and it simplifies the entire process of dealing with mental distress and allows for more profound and immediate changes.
Aloha, and welcome to Psychology Has It Backwards. I'm Christine Heath with a froggy voice because I'm still getting over COVID, which is still a thing, FYI. And I am coming to you from beautiful and warm Hawaii. And I'm here with my super best friend. And gosh, I'm so grateful every time we do one of these episodes that I get to hang out with her for a little while to make them, first of all. And then just because our friendship has gotten even better and better over the last few years. And yeah, it's been such a joy to spend time with
Judy Sedgman. And I'm coming to you from chilly, damp, unpleasant Pittsburgh. So actually, Pittsburgh is a beautiful city. And you can't blame Pittsburgh for the weather, but you can blame where it's located. Mm-hmm. So winter has come upon us, but so far I don't have COVID. So there's always something to be grateful for. And I'm especially grateful always for Chris. And she says everything before I have a chance to say it. But it's really, this has been just such a fun thing to do. Yeah. You know, we've been doing these podcasts now. We've got so many of them. We have to keep going back and looking and seeing what we've already done to decide what to do next. But you know, it's just been a lot of fun, and I think we've learned a lot along the way. So we're grateful to you all for sticking with us, because it causes us to keep looking.
Really, you know, I was looking through the podcasts. I send them to my clients frequently, like, I want you to listen to this podcast, Even though I don't really remember what's on them anymore. But I was like, oh, we did that a couple times. Oh, we did that a couple times. But each time we do it a little bit differently. So I hope you guys will bear with us when we keep repeating ourselves. But that's what happens when you get to be our age.
Well, and you know, it also happens because, you know, the work we do is dedicated to lifelong learning and to continually trying to see deeper beyond what we thought we knew. And sometimes we think something, and then we suddenly have a client that brings up a new problem or a new way of looking at it, or we have a quiet day that suddenly we have an insight, and that's the joy of it. You suddenly realize, oh my gosh, I never said that before about this, but that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing, is that podcasts are pretty short, and there's kind of a lot to say about a lot of different topics. So It's not like one episode is be all and end all for that particular topic. We don't want to bore you for longer than, you know, 25 minutes or so. So we try to keep it short. So speaking of keeping it short, we thought we'd talk today about guilt. One of our listeners requested that we talk about guilt. And guilt is it's an interesting thing, because some people do guilt and some people don't do guilt. So when I was a stepmother, I mean, I still am a stepmother, but when I first got my husband's boys that they came to live with us, my youngest son was used to his mother kind of guilting him to do what she wanted him to do. So he would try doing that with me, and I would look at him and say, sorry, I don't do guilt. So you'll have to think of something else. I don't care that you will be mad at me. It doesn't matter to me, because I know that's coming from you. And he gets so like, you know, but you know, some people are guilty about everything. They feel guilty about your feelings, and they feel guilty about their feelings, and they feel guilty about everything. So some people, it's just kind of a habit of taking responsibility for things that are unpleasant in the world, or things that don't go right, or things that they think are not good things to have happen. And so that's one way that people get kind of caught up in guilt. And another way that people get caught up in guilt is, it's a kind of a way to It's like almost like imagining that you had control over a situation that was where you were victimized, where you were abused in some way, shape, or form. Like if you listen to people after they've been burglarized, they will start off by saying, oh, I bet I left a window open. Yeah. Oh, I bet I did this. Like there's something that they must have done that would contribute to this bad thing happening. So a lot of times children will do that. They're abused, and they, in their mind, think it must be their fault. I mean, part of that is, you know, developmentally, children think everything is about them. But, you know, that it's just kind of that way of wishing you were in control over a bad situation when you really weren't. Mm-hmm. And so when people do that, it's kind of like our ego gets caught up in that, and we start to take it personally, the bad behavior of other people, which is the third thing that I see about guilt, is that there are some people that live in really bad thinking. And so they do bad things to people and they feel guilty about it, which is appropriate. I mean, guilt is there to alert us that we have just done something to someone else that was not a good idea, that was hurtful, or it was, in some way limiting of them, you know, it's keeping them from living their full life, or in some way, shape, we do something stupid. So, you know, you put your foot in your mouth and then you feel guilty for saying it afterwards. That's kind of an appropriate use of guilt. And people generally don't wallow in that. The first two, that they can get caught up in those thoughts and keep thinking them forever and ever and ever. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of wanted to start off by talking about that guilt isn't like a one thing. But if you have a trouble with guilt, you're probably in one of the first two categories.
Yeah, because if you were in the third category, you would have apologized and moved on.
That's right. That's right. And the third category, we kind of, that's when we realize our humanness. You know, or you realize, oh, I was really in a bad mood. I shouldn't have said that. Or I was so stressed out and I wasn't thinking clearly. Like one time I told my boss, I had this boss at addiction, massive kind of program. And I was the assistant administrator. And the nurse in the program would go home and talk to God, and then God would tell her what to do in the treatment center. And I thought that was kind of a little bit weird. And so I couldn't understand why he would go along with that. And I said something to him, something like, you know, like, what's the point in you doing this? Do you get something out of this? And as soon as I said that, I knew I needed to resign. and that was the year my father died. You know, like I was not quite, a lot stressed and insecure anyway. And so that was like an extra thing, but my ego got the better of me and I realized it and I felt guilty about it. And I apologized to him later. And, but these kinds of things happen to everybody in some way, shape or form. Well, not everybody, but many people. And that's just the humanness of us, is that we get caught up in our thinking. Mm-hmm. And we say and do things that are hurtful or stupid, or in that case, very stupid. But if that hadn't happened, though, I would not have been a therapist, because the only job I could find at the time was being a therapist full time at a women's therapy collective. Huh. And I absolutely did not want to be a therapist. I had no, it was my hobby. I did on the side, right? And so there you go. You know, it's like you never know what's going on.
That's really interesting. I yeah, that's great. But that's another example. I think in the third category, which I feel I fell into when I was first learning the principles, I started to notice things I did that were insensitive. And I hadn't noticed them before. I have to admit, you know, I was a CEO of a company and I was had a lot of people working for me and I was busy and stressed and tired. And if I got upset, I thought it wasn't my problem. You know, it was the people who worked for me would just have to deal with it, you know. So, and I was not I wasn't nasty. It wasn't personal, but I would often be critical of things that I didn't really need to do that, you know, I could have handled it a different way. And I remember I had one person that, it's after I started to change, she came in and she offered to do something with our computer system that I used to pay people to come from Nashville to do, you know, because we had this giant computer system back then. It's, you did it all in our office with a big room full of computer stuff. And she came in and she was taking computer classes at the community college, and she was going to get a degree in technology. And I didn't even know that because, of course, I wasn't, didn't have time to pay attention to what people were doing. And she came in and she said, you know, I don't think you need to bring the people in from Nashville. I think I've watched them and I'm in this class and I think I can take care of what it is they come for. I said, really? Because that would have saved me a lot of money. All of us a lot of money. And she said, yeah, I really do. And I said, well, how long do you think I should shut down for you to, because they would come in and they would be shut down for like a couple of days while they were working on our computer, trying to bill us, you know, for a lot of money. She said, I could do it over lunch. I can either do it or I can't. I know what to do. And it's either going to work or it isn't when I do it. So if it doesn't work, then you'll have to call them. And I said, okay, I'll buy you lunch. You know, so we all took lunch and I had something really nice sent in for her and she fixed it. And I came in after lunch and I said, how come you never said anything to me about this before? She said, you were always so angry. I was afraid to talk to you. You know, and we say, honest to God, we saved like $5,000 right then and there. Mm-hmm. Because we had to fly them here, put them up, feed them, you know, right. And then they would take forever because we were in Florida and they weren't. So they would have a good time while they were down there. And so, you know, naturally I gave her a big raise and I gave everybody a raise because I could, you know, I mean, that was much better to be paying my own employees, but I gave her a bonus too. And I thought to myself, boy, this is a lesson.
Really?
From paying attention to what you're saying to people and the effect you're having on them. Yeah. But I honestly think that for many people, we're going so fast or we're so caught up in our own thinking that we lose sight of the feeling state we're in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, honestly, I wasn't even aware of it. I just thought everybody that had my responsibilities in life would be stressed and people mm-hmm. would just expect that. And that's just the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know that you could quiet down and listen to people and reflect and think before you speak. I mean, those things just never crossed my mind. And I think it's funny now, but it isn't funny because I'm sure I really offended a lot of people without meaning to.
Yeah.
And, you know, and when I changed, I remember having a staff meeting after that incident with the computers. And I said to people, please come in and talk to me if you see something we should be doing differently, because you're doing the work. Mm-hmm. I'm out there selling and minding the clients, but you're here making it happen. And I don't know what you do. You know, I know what you do generally, but I don't know what it takes. Mm-hmm. And they were like, really? And I said, yeah, no, I want to hear from you. And then the one person that had come to talk to me said, really, it's true. She listened to me and I fixed it and it was really nice. But everything changed because we all became closer and more collegial. And the people that worked for me took more interest in the details of the business because they knew if they had a good idea, I would listen.
Mm-hmm.
And we got better and better at what we did because they did have good ideas. Mm-hmm. And that was just a perfect example to me of appropriate guilt. You know, as soon as I realized I was doing that, I felt I had to make it right.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to not only make it right, but keep it right. But I was living in a different state of mind, and it was not that hard to keep it right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. It's kind of our ego, isn't it? It's mm-hmm. like it depends on how we interpret what happens in life, not only what other people do, because a lot of people take responsibility for other people's bad behavior.
Right.
And they feel like somehow it was their fault.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like somehow you could make somebody treat you poorly. Like women will do that a lot of times with when they're in abusive relationships with men. They start thinking like, I must have, you know, I made turkey instead of ham. That's why he, you know, beat me up. Why did I do that? You know, like it's this kind of weird ego thing that gets us caught up in it, and then we keep thinking about it. So we keep getting caught up. Like one time, we were in Minnesota, and Joe Bailey and I had the Minneapolis Institute of Mental Health. It was like the first true clinic that was totally based on this work of Sydney Banks, the three principles. And there was we had a student there that was a social work student, and she was into some kind of, now this is, you know, early 80s. So she was into some new agey kind of things that I thought were a little bit nutty. And when I talked to her, I must have been very harsh with her. And I made her feel really bad. So she goes to Joe and she's crying and Chris hurt my feelings and blah, blah, blah. So Joe comes to me and he tells me, Chris, you know, you got to lighten up on people. You're too hard on people. And I was like, what are you talking about? And so he said, well, you know, this person came and said this. And I said, well, she's kind of nutty. And he goes, Chris, I've had other people do this too. I was like, oh, really? And suddenly I was like, oh my gosh, I am too hard on people. Yeah. I am. And then suddenly I saw it, you know, like, oh my gosh. And I was absolutely mortified. So then enter, you know, my ego. And now I'm into what a bad person I am and how awful it was. And for three, that was on a Friday. And for 2 days until Sunday morning, I got up and I'm still crying and crying and so upset. So I decided I'm going to call Sid and ask for help because I can't get myself out of it. So I tell him what happened and he goes, now, Chris, now, dearie, he said, now, dearie. He said, sometimes we get in a low mood and sometimes we get in a very low mood like you are right now. Mm-hmm. He said, now, if there's something you need to change about yourself, change it and then forget it. Mm-hmm. He said, I think you're bored and you need to like move to Hawaii and set up a clinic. And it was like, oh, what a great idea. You know, because sometimes I think we don't keep changing. And then we get caught up in our old thinking again. Yeah. And for me, a telltale sign of that is harsh and demanding. Yeah. And thinking that other what I see, other people should be able to see. It's like, mm-hmm. if I can see it, anybody can see it. Mm-hmm. But again, that's just my ego that gets in the way and causes me to do that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like sometimes when people do that, they get stuck in that moment in time for years. Like now, for me, it's a good story. You know, like, I mean, am I still harsh with people? Yes. Am I still too hard on people? Yes. But I keep getting better every year. And it doesn't happen very often. And it's not all the time, but sometimes I do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's just kind of, what we need to remember is that we're all human beings. And when you do something like that, you gotta, as the Hawaiians call, they have a term called ho'oponopono, which is means to make the feeling right again.
Yeah.
And then you can let go of it. When you make the feeling right again in yourself, and it will tell you what to do. Like in some cases, you don't do anything. Like in the 12-step program, there's ninth step where you go and make amends to people that you've screwed over. Unless it would cause more trouble in their life. You know, and that's kind of like, you don't like go make it right so that you feel better. You go make it right so the other person feels better.
Right.
And that's kind of where we get caught up in ourselves too much when with guilt is that it's either our fault we did something bad or, you know, it's something we need to do about it. Mm-hmm. But sometimes we just have to get quiet and say, what's the loving thing to do here? What do I need to see about this? Mm-hmm. So you may have to apologize. You may have to change things. But if you're guilty and you haven't done anything, that's just your thinking.
And that's your ego. That's thinking your ego. Especially bad. You know, it's just as easy, I think, for people to identify themselves as especially bad as it is for people. It's all ego. You know, and ego is thinking too much about yourself and losing sight of the fact that you're just a human being like everybody else. Mm-hmm. And our moods and our thinking change. But you know, because I did that when I was a kid. I used to feel really bad if I did something that disappointed my parents. Because I especially my dad, because I kind of idolized my dad. He was a good dad, but he was a really, he demanded a lot of himself, and he was very successful. And I was like, I'll never be like that, you know. So, yet he was really never disappointed. You know, it was me. I had this idea about myself that I had to achieve this level of perfection and everything, and I thought that he expected that, but I made that whole thing up. You know, he was interested in me, but he thought I was fine. And I was just, I was just insecure. And then I would start feeling guilty, like, oh, my dad worked so hard. He's going to be so disappointed in me. I didn't study hard enough for this, or I didn't. It was always little stuff. But, you know, I really punished myself for a while. And my mom is a person who noticed it. And she said, you know, your dad really thinks you're doing fine. I wish you'd be a little nicer to yourself. She blamed it on the fact that I was hormonal.
Yeah.
It's like the woman's excuse. And I'm sure that contributed. But, you know, it was also just too much thinking about myself.
Yeah.
And too much putting, you know, making myself having to be important about something. So sometimes we get thinking, you know, I'm especially bad, instead of, you know, I'm so proud of myself, I'm just doing great, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, you know, it's a focus on what about me,
mm-hmm.
that creates these feelings. It either creates a, you know, arrogance or guilt. They're kind of like two sides in the same coin. And I think that one of the things that people do when they really calm down and they see the role of thought in life is they realize I'm in different moods at different times, and sometimes I do things I don't feel like good about, but I can, as Chris said, you know, either make it right with the person or make it right with myself. But we're only one thought away from being in a much nicer feeling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. It's like sometimes those moments will also haunt you, mm-hmm. you know, like there's probably things I said to clients before I learned the principles, that every once in a while it'll come in my head and I'll go like, oh gosh, that was really not a good thing to say. But I just have to let it go, because I don't even know where the people are anymore. And I did the best I could at the time when I learned the principles to make up for that. And it was also the best I could see to do at the time. Mm-hmm. But I can't, every once in a while when my mood drops, you could see this memory kind of floats in and kind of, oh, my gut, you know, gets tight, because you know it was you that was off. You know that what you said was not hurt, was not helpful, but may have been hurtful. And getting like okay with that is, for people like me that are really hard on themselves, that's a hard thing. And sometimes it's easier to hang on to guilt than it is to really forgive yourself and recognize that you were frail, that you just were the victim of your own thinking and you didn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
And that just brings humility and brings you back into the present moment, where you can, all you can do now is do the best you can now to make up for whatever that was.
Mm-hmm. And not think about it too much.
And you then, know? Yeah, when it comes to mind, it's like, oh, yeah, let that one go. I can't do anything about that. You know, that I think that's the hard part, because you want to be able to fix it, right? When you start feeling better and you see it, you want to be able to fix it, but it can't be fixed once it's out. You have to. It's the acceptance piece that I think a lot of people have trouble with.
Yeah, I'm always telling clients, if you knew better, you'd do better.
Yeah.
You know, the idea is to keep looking to understand life better, understand mm-hmm. the nature of life, understand when not to speak. You know, mm-hmm. it's like we know now that when you're in a really low mood, it's not a good time to be talking.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for a lot of my life, and kind of what the example of the world is, you know, you think you're onto something when you get really upset about it.
Mm-hmm.
So when I think about all the protest movements that I was a part of, you know, that we were all really pissed off,
mm-hmm.
but we never accomplished anything because we were just angry.
Mm-hmm.
we didn't really step back and go like, how can each, what could happen for each one of us such that we could make this better, do our part. And we thought our part was to just get out there and yell about it, but that doesn't make it better.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so I think that's the thing you learn. I think you probably learn it over life, but also from understanding the principles deeper and deeper, is that you can only do what you can see to do at the state of mind and the level of thinking that you're in. Mm-hmm. And it looks good at the time or you wouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And if it stops looking good to you, it's a reason to be grateful. Mm-hmm. Say, I've learned something and now I can either fix it or just leave it behind, but I know better now.
You know, it's so, it's a beautiful thing because, you know, like you and I, we really, you know, what the bad things we've done are relative compared to, yeah. I mean, we have people that, you know, murder their brother and do things that are like forever that you can't fix. Right. And so it seems like feeling guilty about that would be appropriate. But the guilt is really what drives the insecurity. The insecurity gets so big, they got to use some kind of alcohol or drugs to cope with life. And then they end up doing something bad all over again. Mm-hmm. So it just compounds it. And it's, I think for a lot of people that live at a really low level of consciousness where violence and drugs and kind of antisocial behavior seems like a good idea. As they start waking up and they start seeing that that's just that coming from their thinking, not because of their past or because of their family or because of their upbringing or because of their, you know, the colonization of people in the world. You know, it's like they start to realize that, oh, I have a choice now.
Right.
And that gives them such a sense of confidence. Because when you keep doing stupid, bad things all the time, you start really losing hope in yourself.
Yeah.
Because there's not much that changes. Mm-hmm. And when you start to see that you're the thinker, and no matter how bad your life has been, no matter what a mean, nasty person you've been, that's not the true you. That's not the real you.
Right.
And so, like one of the guys that I worked with that I still work with, and he was like the motorcycle gang guy. Like this is like his fourth time being sent for anger management. He came in my office one time with a knife in his pocket, and you know he was carrying weapons all the time. He was really a very insecure man, and He said, I've become a kinder, gentler version of myself. Uh-huh. That was kind of the first thing he did. And now he comes to group just to help the other guys.
Yeah.
It's like he is very good about making it be real and also showing hope that no matter what you've done, that you can live in a healthier, more beautiful feeling. And that your past then changes, kind of like when the past looks like it's real, you're going to be troubled by guilt. You're going to be, it's always going to be on your mind. But when you start to realize the past is now just a thought that's carried through time and brought to life when the mood matches, right? That's your freedom from whatever you might have done that you regret, that you feel bad about.
Yeah.
So,
you've done it again.
Anybody can change, and you just got to, again, get out of yourself.
Yeah, that's the most important thing is to realize that it's much more fun to think about life and being part of it than it is to think about me, 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 me.
Right.
So have a great week.
Have a great week, everybody. Aloha.
Bye-bye.
We hope you heard something new and that you will continue to join us to challenge the prevailing thinking about the possibilities for health in everyone. To subscribe to the podcast, visit our website at psychologyhasitbackwards.com.